3 to 4 o'clock roughly. We have this as a, what is this, Teams meeting in person. And
right now we don't have any.
We do not. Board members. On the Teams, I guess, which Dan usually does, anyway. Introduction, I guess, roll call.
Don Jay.
Chris Meyer.
Helps.
Danielle Kelly.
David Stipe.
Rock Houston.
And Amy Arnold.
And on the Teams meeting, it looks like we have Wendy, Evelyn, Sue Marshall, councilperson.
Hello. Hi.
Hello, Sue.
Hi.
So I guess, do we have any public comment that we've received?
So we don't have any, we haven't asked, but we are unaware of anyone who wants to make a comment. So again, in department updates, we'll talk about some public comments we're receiving on.
The fees.
Yes.
Okay. With that, we can add approval minutes. If we have no public comment, we're up to.
Thank you. For the record, Rock Houston. Department updates. So we, David will have a complete team on Monday. We will have our planner two hired, Michael, will be coming on board. Like we said before, he's got several years of experience doing soup to nuts park development. So from planning all the way through construction management, all phases of it. He's worked in Texas for about 7 years, I believe, 6, 7 years, and then he went to Baltimore in the private sector for the last couple of years. And so he's a grad from UW, so he's kind of come back to his home state. So I'm looking forward to getting on, him on board and up to speed. We have four other openings in operations. Two of those are full time positions, two are project positions that were got approved. I think we talked about that in the past, that with the addition of Cozy Camp, Hawkinson Meadows, Golf Course, new stuff at Florida, and Security Choma Natural Area, we're trying to get the additional FTE to kind of offset that. So we got project positions for 2 years. We'll see how they justify their needs. We started our public comment period, I think on the 26th of June, for our fee program, sort of that report. Prior to that, we did meet in this room with many of the sport leagues that we work with in our properties. That meeting went well. I think in a nutshell, if there is a fee increase, they'd like to see an increase in something. So pay more, want more, is sort of that thing. They're concerned about any fee increases in regards to the tax to their members. Of course, or any fees with some of the costs we have there for parking fees, as well as changes in the road. So we'll summarize that in the report. We probably got under 30 comments, maybe a little around under 50 for sure, email comments from the public. Most of those are opposed to any fee increases at all, given that everything else is going up, just one more thing. There's been one or two that are mixed in regards to understanding why, et cetera. We did have an opinion piece that was in a newspaper that identified that they didn't want to. And I think one piece there is that there was a distinction trying to be made that parks are that we were trying to charge for anything of an individual choice. That if you chose to do something, you could be in. And really, what we're trying to get across is that there's individual benefits, a community benefits in regards to our park, amenity structures, some of the things that we offer. And that for community benefit, there's the typical, and what we're looking at is not having any sort of cost for that. But as you get more of an individual benefit, where you're having exclusive use of an area, that's what you need to do come in. So I think that was the one thing in there that seemed to every choice one makes to recreate or not recreate choice. And park and fees and associated with some of those. We have all three of our bigger capital projects open to some degree. So Cozy Camp was soft open on Friday, so people can actually utilize the property. Still grass needs to grow, still some things to do there, but that is soft open. Philida, for the 4th of July, we have the playground area open for it to be utilized. We're still coming back and finishing up the last there. And I think for over a month now, 5 weeks, wherever it is, this golf course has been open. Continue to get good feedback on the course, and we mowed the course for the first time. So
I drove by that and saw how you mowed out the little sections. They're out there flat.
Yeah, it's been pretty much any time I've been there, it's been pretty full. I mean, at least I've been there Tuesday at 9 a.m. and it's, you know, 12 holes are full already. You know, at the end of the day, it's full. So I think we're encouraged by that use. Of course, now people want more of those courses. So we'll continue to move forward with those things. But that's a good thing. We've got Curtain Creek Community Park. I think last month we talked about them. We had our first meeting with our consultants, and that's moving forward now to get the revised 60-70% designs. And so that's possible. We'll start to see in the fall. We'll get that on schedule. We are meeting on Tuesday with council to go over consultant contract for Army Sports Fields for that project to get an extension and an increase of the significant increase of about $240,000 to complete the construction management impact and all that. That's probably been going on for a long time, and there's a lot of reasons to why we're at where we're at. Some of that is rates have increased significantly over the when it originally started back in 2018, 2019. Some things that were out of scope that we had to do to meet city requirements or requirements, and some product management stuff that we're managing better now. So we'll see council's decision on that. If that gets approved and moved forward, then we'll be looking to get that constructed in late 24, 25, by June 25. We did it. We'll probably having an article in the Reflector soon. Danielle, you want to talk about your tour this morning?
Sure. So, Danielle, for the record, we had State Representative of Barrett Obarno come into town, as well as Councilor Marshall. We were on the Ridgefield Pits project. It's a huge restoration project we have planned with Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership. They're the ones keying it off. We did lamprey, kind of pre-monitoring to understand how many lamprey are actually in the stream in those pockets of the pits. It was pretty educational. Had a lot of scientists on the property today just looking at the Ridgefield Pits project in general. Yeah. So it should have an article in the Reflector potentially next week. We're not sure. But they were there taking photos, so we may have some outreach there.
And then, my 4th of July they always bring surprises to parks. We woke up to having two of our porta potties up to the ground. Someone had lit off mortars inside of them. So.
Which sites, my dad?
Hawkinson and. Can't think of the other one off the top of my head. Hawkinson, we had the same thing happen last year, so.
It's an annual event.
The downside is that's evidence that people were fireworks off in our parks. You have any reports of injury like that? Graffiti's on the rise, and you're gonna see more of it as well this summer, because our sandblaster is broken. It's scheduled to be replaced in some order, but the parts that we need to replace it are back ordered for a bit. So we, instead of going out there every day and sort of packing it very quickly, we're saving it up, renting the machine, getting it as much as we can. But in general, we're seeing an increase. Even on Highway 14, that new wall that they're putting there, it's already been bad. I mean, it needs so many different things, right? Maybe it needs to get outside. But it's, we're getting more of it, and it's getting a bit more so. Public's starting to notice that. Doing as much as we can, it's just, we spend quite a bit of time, especially at the city park, just trying to remove the graffiti. And if you've been to the skate park, it is part of the adventure. So we are working on it. We are aware of it. And I think that's all the big stuff. Do you have any questions outlined from regards to the department?
Real quick, Kirk Creek, did I see, when we get to the 16th? Right, is that going to be available?
Yes, when we get to 60%, we'll have a public meeting for one.
Okay.
We'll bring information here so you guys can see as well. But there will be an open house here because we want to make sure it's very clear. There's a concern that through the early planning process, we had communicated that we were going to build the whole kit and caboodle on the master plan. I wasn't here, so I didn't part of that. Every park cross program I've been a part of is we never have enough money to build out a whole master plan. So we do things in phases. And that's essentially where we're at here. So we want to make sure it's clear that we're phasing this project in phase one. That here's the thing we're going to be doing. We are doing planning and other stuff for the other elements. So we're very confident. It's not a permitting process. So we're shovel ready. We're doing the next phases. And that land use process gives us 5 years to do the work with some exception allows to extend that for another 5 years. So we once we get it done, then it's a scramble process of trying to figure out how to prioritize future work and find other resources to continue to do with it.
Kind of chewed up, we don't have a forum.
I'll
back up to
I'd like to motion that we approve the minutes from last month.
All in favor?
Aye.
And motion passed. How was too quick. Is having the minutes online or doing those and via the email good? All right, just trying to save the phone. One set of minutes at a time. But sometimes they get a little.
Yeah, I mean, that last one
is 50 pages. Please, I found that you guys printed my comments. I stopped printing this meeting.
Yes.
Can I add a couple of maintenance items to your manager's update? We talked previously about the parking lot at Klein Line Pond in Zeman Creek Park. The cape seal that's going to go over top of the pavement repair will be done sometime in the next couple of weeks. It may take 3 weeks. We're part of a bigger project, so we have to sort of fit in with their schedule. And then I believe the striping is scheduled for the 7th and 8th or the 8th and 9th of September. We're coordinating with our preservation folks to make sure that we're not stepping on anybody's toes. You might hear about that. I believe Lindy has a bid opening at the end of the month to replace the pond shelter at Klein Line. So we're hoping to get a bid that we can move forward with on that. We just vacated Curtis Springs. Curtis Springs, Holm is now vacant. Klein Line, Holm is now vacant. Daybreak, not Lower Daybreak, but the other Daybreak, Lower Daybreak. And then Minkler, which is that little dog park up north. And while that was going on, we were also doing a big, Amy Wood was doing a big hazard tree project at Jorgensen, Daybreak Park, in the creek, and at Minkler as well. There were a bunch of dead poplars that we waited till the, the tenant was out before we did that work, just for safety reasons. We did get a really nice email from a neighbor at Jorgensen who was very happy. They thought that the contractor that did the work did an amazing job, and the park looks, they feel like the park looks a lot better. We also got an email from sort of the principal disc golf advocate that we've been collaborating with for many years. I have to remote it and got kudos on the moment. So I like to bring the to life. So those little wins are nice to share.
So the houses, we eventually gonna demo those.
Klein Line, we're exploring the potential of having staff report at Klein Line and Curtis Springs.
Okay.
We will be tearing down Minkler this year and Daybreak this year. We will be tearing down Lower Daybreak, the double Y, regular Daybreak, and Lucia Falls sometime in the next month. And we're working on getting RV sites there so we can have hosts and RV as opposed to hosts and property that we don't have to maintain. Sort of the long-term strategy for that host situation. So it sounds like we're getting rid of a lot of assets, and in some cases they're well appreciated by time and good use.
Sorry. Thank you.
And any other questions for Meyer? Hearing none. We'll move on to unfinished business. Nothing was done. Another new business, which I think we did it first.
Do you have to unblock me so I can share, or can I just share?
I think you can share.
Let's see. So, for half of you in that room, we had this presentation, our earlier version of this presentation.
Last year,
June-ish.
Yeah.
And so now we'll bring it back to an update, part of our ongoing training, and tell you where we're at and how we got there. So,
so we're going to talk first about our, for the record, David Stipe, planning and development manager. Thank you for the opportunity to present the two topics I'm going to present to you today. The first topic is a list of our undeveloped properties and an outline of how we evaluate them and prioritize them for development. And then this information informs the capital improvement plan, which is the next presentation I'll do for you. So as Rocky mentioned, we brought this to the Parks Advisory Board last year. There wasn't a quorum, so there was no action to advance this. We're not asked. bring it back for action at a later date, but it informs the capital plan. So by approving the capital plan before it goes to council, you're in effect approving these prioritized lists. So they go sort of hand in glove. So we continue, we serve the residents of Clark County by providing them with park and recreation services, and those services are identified in that 23 to 27 PROS plan. Upon completion of Kirk Creek, Pleasant Valley, and Salmon Creek Community Club neighborhood parks, we'll have completed our initial commitment to develop 35 parks. The original 35 parks that were in our portion of the Metropolitan Park District. We're working on a plan over the next 10 plus years to continue to provide recreation services recognizing the growth in the county on the 17 undeveloped properties that we currently own, in addition to looking for other opportunities to acquire property in different PIP districts based on the grading that the PIP districts receive for level of service. And so each PIP district is evaluated for community park opportunities, neighborhood park opportunities, and open space opportunities. And that plays into the prioritization process. The criteria are generally outlined here, and that niche impact is directly plays into the evaluation that we did as part of the PROS plan. Does it satisfy a need that was identified in the PROS plan when we're evaluating the park? Park user impacts, there's two parts to that. There's a DEI criterion, which is age, so below 5 years old, over 65 years old, median income. We added a couple of different layers to that based on the community survey that we have access to, that were children that are on free and reduced lunch, and then children identified from schools that are living below the poverty line. And so we added that criterion in this last evaluation, and that's part of the reason why it shifted from the old PROS plan to the new PROS plan. We'll get into that in a little bit when we're looking at the list. And then the levels of use. You know, if we spend money on a facility, are people going to come and use it? And that's based on population around the property, projected population around the property where it's going to be developed or not. Return on investment is, if we build something, do we have a revenue potential? Do we also have partners? So can we leverage other dollars? With the Recreation Conservation Office, there's always an opportunity to pursue grant funding. There are partners like the Allens here in the group who have been great partners in raising dollars through neighborhood associations and other efforts. And so there's that leverage component on that strategic return. Operational impact, if we build something, do we have the capacity to do? When we get into the capital plan, we'll talk a little bit about shifting down a year with regards to development because of bringing facilities online, not bringing the operation staff, not building capacity in the operation side. We feel a need to just downshift a little bit and focus a little bit more on the properties that we have and talk a little bit about that in the future or in the next presentation. And then stewardship impact. If we build something, does it have a negative impact on a sensitive area corridor? Or does developing the park stop environmental impact? We can mitigate through sensitive areas from park. So it goes both ways in stewardship. So I just quickly will run down the different properties, the different PIP districts. I have maps of where they are in the PIP district. I don't necessarily have to draw, aerial photography for each property. It gets really cumbersome. It's like test driving a car. If you've driven the third car, you don't remember which is which. So showing you 17 aerials will just confuse you. So in PIP District 5, we have four properties. One of them, Anderson, is a community park. So it's 9.3 acres. Our park sizes are ideally a neighborhood park would be 3 to 5 acres, and a community park would be bigger than that, ideally bigger than 10 acres. That allows us to build more destination sorts of facilities like sport courts in groups or program recreation facilities like the ones that we're surrounded by right now. Generally speaking, our community parks have parking, have restrooms, ideally flush restrooms. And so the cost for developing those is much higher, and the permitting process takes a lot longer. So we'll talk a little bit about that in the prioritization process as well. And then three neighborhood parks sort of spread out throughout the PIP district, and I'll show you them now. And then we have in PIP District 6, we have the community park, Curtin Creek Community Park, not a neighborhood park, the one that we're talking about getting a new contract together with Robertson Engineering to finish the drawings for that and to build our first phase, and then two neighborhood parks. In PIP District 7, we only have one undeveloped property, and that's St. John's, and it's a small piece of property. It would be considered more of a pocket park. You're familiar with the National Recreation Park Association terminology. When parks get down to that size, they become a little bit more costly to maintain because you're traveling to them more frequently. So if you think of the cost to travel per acre, so we like to try and keep our neighborhood parks in that 3 to 5 acre size. So here's the PIP District 5 distribution. We've got the State Route 5 here in the middle for reference. One of our existing parks here as reference, Hawkinson Neighborhood Park, our community park. And so Austin Heritage, Anderson far out to the east, Mackey and Vidra in PIP District 5. PIP District 6, Curtin Creek for reference. We've been talking about that piece of property, the Gaddis Wetlands, also proximate to that. That's a clean water habitat sort of project. Patton Parkway is right here for reference, and then 205, this is 205 right here. And so Sunset and Covington Middle School properties in District 6. District 7.
What's a Covington Middle School?
It's just an undeveloped piece of property next to a middle school.
Okay.
There's already a school there. Ready.
It's like a big field right now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it probably, like many of our properties, they undeveloped properties, they are being used as parks. Mm-hmm. In some cases, in formal ball fields, in some cases, other parks. And so we talked a little bit about that previously. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking about the term property, which is park. The lone undeveloped piece of property in PIP District 7, the St. John's. It's just north of Bosco Farm, sort of sandwiched between Bosco Farm and Douglas Carter Fisher Neighborhood Park for reference. And then the other three PIP districts, 8, 9, and 10. So we have three properties in PIP District 8. One of them, Pleasant Valley, which is on our development list, is a 29-acre site. It's a classified currently as a community park, but vehicular access to the site isn't really practical without conversations with the school district because we have a small little sliver of land that is back to our property. So maintenance of ball fields and portable toilets and visible picnic shelters that are somewhat problematic. So the master plan somewhat reflects that, and the plans moving forward will also reflect that. And then Minnehaha, which is sort of at the top of our prioritization list, but not at the top of the development list. It scored the highest when it came to the DEI criteria that I just mentioned previously. And it went from pretty far down the list when we added some additional DEI criteria to the top of the list, given its location and the neighborhood that it would serve. Fifth District 9, Cougar Creek Woods, which we'll also talk about in the capital plan, is a 10-acre community park. And then Foley, which is an old orchard in the sort of north of Cougar Creek Woods. And then finally, Fifth District 10, we have Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park. And when you look at that and you see 12.7 acres, you say, well, why isn't that a community park? And that's because it's significantly, most of its habitat. I wouldn't say impacted my habitat. It's along Whipple Creek. Riparian zone there and the slope there leave us with a small sliver of property that's actually developable and have a conceptual master plan for that reflects developing about 3 to 4 acres of it. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Then we also have Berry, another little park, 1.8 acre park, and then Mount Vista and North Fairgrounds are 5 acres. And then real quickly, the maps. So 205 and I-5 interchange here. Pleasant Valley is already partially developed up to the north. Blueberry is out east. And then here's Minnehaha down in the urban area. It's just south of Hillville Park. And in an interesting little area that's still county, but surrounded by city. Fifth District 9, Cougar Creek Woods, here sort of in the center, I-5 for reference, Vancouver Lake for reference. The Salmon Creek Corridor is all this public property here. Fine Line Pond is sitting right here. And Foley and Cougar Creek are relatively close together. And there's neighborhood development around Foley. We'll talk a little bit about some things that we'd like to do at Foley. Initially, not necessarily developing improvements, that's a gap. We'll talk about that in the capital plan as well. And then Fifth District 10, for reference, we're north of the I-5, 205 interchange. Cozy Camp is the property that we're currently open, and we have a substantial completion punch list, 5-acre park. So this next year will not be developed on this. It will be on the maybe we have a new neighborhood park list. Mount Vista and Salmon Creek Community Club are relatively close together. This is Whipple Creek Natural Area right here. Berry is out to the west of I-5. And so it's North Fairgrounds. It's actually north of the property. So that's the that's the properties by district. Again, we evaluated the properties by the user impact, the DEI criteria that I mentioned, operational impacts and environmental impacts. And we came up with a list. I don't have the actual prioritized list. I have the deciphered list to share with you today. This is similar to what we shared last year because we've already made some commitments. And as we've learned more as a planning and development team, we've learned about other commitments through conversations with partners. And so we continue to shuffle the list. So you see, you'll notice that Minnehaha is not the number one park. That's because we have Kirk Creek already in development, and we have a lot of community input and investment in Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park, as well as Pleasant Valley and Cougar Creek Woods, and so that's why those parks continue to be at the top of the list, even though they don't really shine in certain of the evaluation criteria. And then we generally fall in line after that. So St. John's was the third ranked project, and and so on down the line. We have another typo, sorry about that. And then you'll notice that there are some things that are shifted around a little bit, and that's because I'm making the assumption that when we develop two or three things in TIF District 8, the criteria will change in TIF District 8, so something that might have been ranked really high in that user use impact, that evaluation will go down, but we don't have the tool to sort of reevaluate, but it's just a staff time to say, okay, well, if this was developed, then the ranking would change. So we've just done that a little bit informally through dialogue. So this is the list as it currently stands. As I mentioned, it informs the capital plan. We'll talk a little bit more about development timelines when we get into the capital improvement plan, draft capital improvement plan presentation. And then just real quickly, some of the projects that are on the horizon. This project doesn't actually show up on the undeveloped property list, but these are all the projects that we've got going on. The Harmony Sports Complex, like Rocky mentioned, Kirk Creek, that we've talked about, Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park, and you'll notice that this Salmon Creek property is quite a bit bigger, but just this little polygon right here is the polygon that we get developed, because the rest of it is slope or habitat. And then here is Pleasant Valley Community Park, and you'll notice the school sitting here to the northeast, and there's no access to the right of way.
There's a real narrow,
like 10 or 15 feet.
The master plan.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Sufficient width to have an access.
Yeah, there's a pedestrian access that comes back through here, but no vehicular access. So we wouldn't be able to build a parking lot here. So generally speaking, if we develop a community park that has those sort of destination sort of facilities like this golf course, people drive there. If you've been to Hawkinson, the north parking lot is now full all the time. It's either playground people or disc golfers. Like the last time I was there last Friday, there were 50 cars in the north parking lot. So it's changed the use pattern in the park already. And so pickleball, more than one pickleball court would generate sort of destination traffic, reservable shelters, soccer fields. And so if we can't fill the parking lot to serve those people, we create all sorts of pressure on the right of way, and then we start getting complaints from the neighbors when people start parking. So we've already had a few people call at Cody Camp about people parking the road to use the park. So those things typically die down after people get used to parks, but hundreds of people, hundreds of cars are creating issues.
And this may be a parcel that come back. Determine whether or not the current classification is consistent with its planned use.
Yeah.
So is it partially a natural area? And that's something we get these maps on from service and part of this neighborhood park because those have those core destination features. Or it is what it is as a community park and it still matters. So, but those will be some of those questions we want to get feedback. Couple other properties I'll try to make sure that because we classified it 10 years ago or 20 years ago as X, when we actually developed it, does it make sense? You know, Austin Heritage is one of those where most of it's encumbered with, well, it has a lot of natural overlays, so you can't do a lot with it. And so as such, is it more of a natural area and trail create a difference in a recreational asset for that community? Versus a standard neighborhood park, and that sort of level of mitigation we have to do would be significant and maybe bust the bank, so to speak. So those are some of those things we're looking at and continue to move forward to develop these assets, but also make sure we're developing them to where it's consistent with its characteristics.
Okay. and environmentally appropriate. Any questions about the property list and process?
My question is super exhaustive and helpful. Is that right?
Well, we will update this every 6 years as the proposed plan gets updated because of the HIP district level of service will change. As people move in, as neighborhoods are built, as we build property, as we build parks. And so every 6 years, we'll revisit this list. What we won't do is take something like Curtin Creek, if we were evaluating in Curtin Creek was fourth or fifth down the line. We wouldn't say, well, we're just going to stop all of it that we've done on Curtin Creek. It doesn't make dollars sense to waste all that staff time and the time that the consultants have spent on it. So that's part of the learning process. That's why we see the Salmon Creek Community Club still at the top of the list. We've worked on already. Woods has been put back on the list, and put in Valley because of the community investment, community interest in properties. So
we're continuing to try to acquire properties. So maybe next month we'll be able to talk about one potential acquisition in the district of the natural area. We're waiting for an appraisal to come back to see whether or not it meets the buyer and the seller. We probably identified 10 properties in 5th District 7. Most of those are natural areas to acquire. We have I always have to call it a C word, currency, compression, I think it's concurrency, where we have a time limit to spend $5 or we have to grab currency to give them back. And so in 5th District 7, we're in that situation. As you know, we're at right now, it's pretty much fully developed. There's not a lot of ground available, what is available is developable. So, or it's already been acquired by a developer, lost out on a few of those. Continuing to try to do that. We do have another acquisition up in six, up 119th that by the high school there. We went to talk to people about one piece, but they'd already sold that. So again, trying to fill. We got, if you remember from the pros plan, those heat maps, and we're trying to look at those areas where we relied on parks and trying to fill these holes. That may lead us to some policy work with you on changing some code in regards to where we can acquire property. So have a buffer like the view. So community parks have a 3 mile service radius around the plant. So we have a acquisition range of 1.5 miles outside of the fifth boundary. Could we have a community park that serves 3 mile radius and encompasses three different fifth districts, three different fifth districts? How to fund that. So those are some of the sort of policy code questions that we may be looking at over the next year. Again, trying to think proactively of where are we going to secure some property for the future before some things change and where property is actually for sale. So right now, as up by Hawkinson and north of there a little bit or in that area, there's 10, 20, 30 acre parcels that are for sale and for a price that we can afford. It's just that we don't have any money outside of the district five. And so we're some of those things. We know where things are going, and if we can be a little bit more strategic. The city of Vancouver did this for their community parks, where they've got a buffer that they've acquired and they try to make the piece of it.
I don't know if this is in code, but Hawkinson's a community park, and it's not in 5th District 5, but it's considered serving 5th District 5 because it's touching the boundary. So can we go another 4 mile outside of the boundary to try and stay ahead of the speculators in real estate thing?
Very cool. Is another one.
Yeah. Touching. Yeah. Property that we own that is operated by legal operators. So.
you know, what they say, if you don't adapt, you die. So we're trying to see if we can adapt to continue to meet the recreational needs.
Is future growth of Vancouver, is future growth of the city limits of Vancouver to preparation, is that included in the health system area? Or, like you mentioned before, that Minnehaha is surrounded by the city of Vancouver. Is there going to be or by the city?
So, we'll get my political plum out. We, the Metropolitan Park District, will be absorbed eventually by the city. It's all part of the growth area of the city, and so that is a future reality. They're about 15 years behind their annexation plan that they adopted back in, I think, 2008 or earlier than that. So we are knowing this can occur, and I think what we're trying to do is look at what our demographics and our needs are, and investing the money there where it's needed, and assume when it does transfer, so you know, whether it's in the city limits or not, so that we meet that recreation. So we're aware it's going to happen, but we don't know how it's going to jump. Yeah, the last jump was kind of up over to Costco. You know, that wasn't perfect land, but again, is it going to move up I-5? Is it going to just make it work? You know, we have 5th District 4, which is sort of an island surrounded by the city. So, I mean, we have all these things that will eventually get absorbed. You know, I guess you can't create
an island. It's against a lot to create an island, but you can create a really long skinny. Can you get the county to go out and get, you know, desirable land with the annexation for Moscow?
And so that's where we'll continue to watch. And when that does occur, there's a dialogue between the city and county. We'll try to be a part of that conversation. A little bit higher level, but again, continue to engage. And that would be the discussion is what happens to the property, how that all goes over. Furthermore, there'll be the discussion of, see if I can get this right. So our GCPD boundary, we still have a taxing base district there, but that money comes to the county, doesn't go to the city. And so that would be a discussion we have to have the city. So are we transferring those funds to the city to meet the recreational needs? Are we being contracted to meet those needs? And so it gets to be an interesting conversation there. But that would be another wrinkle.
At the end of the day, we build Minnehaha, and it's going to serve that neighborhood, whether it's a city neighborhood or whether it's a neighborhood. And that's ultimately our mission, is to evaluate the recreation and provide service where we can.
The last thing I'll say about the property inside the city, in PPP boundary, I think we have 70 or 90 parcels that are legacy land parcels inside of PPP boundary. By our division, but they're inside the MPD boundary, they're separate. That's legacy lands. And those are natural areas that are not accounting for our natural area level of service. So we have the property not accounting for level of service. And in addition, as if the city did annex Castle's property, those properties remain managed by legacy lands. We have the ability to turn those, transfer them over to the MPP parcels and some on the service, and change that diagram that moving forward to those parcels would be part of the county city's management of the park property. Now all the encumbrances on that property. That's another one of those chin scratchers that we're in the beginning phases of looking at and what one little change, how it's ripples across the pond, create big waves of, oh my gosh, financial perspective.
That's such a good point.
And we don't want to only invest money in the north end of it, you know. And, but that is a thing to go, but then I was like, we're getting high. But once the data showed us from the graphic, I need there, that's where
in the interest of time, I will remove my question slide. But if you do have any other questions about the unfilled priority list, feel free to chime in, because it, like I said before, it does inform the capital. So you have a copy of the capital plan in front of you. It's a lot to absorb. This is the first time we're going to be discussing it with you, so don't get all nervous. You're not going to have time to think about it. We're not going to be bringing it back to you until the fall for your recommendation to advance at the council between today and that day. We will have a public comment period for the capital plan. So this is the first draft of the 24 to 29 capital. So here's your timeline. So we're going to plan a public meeting around August 1st. That's approximate date. What comment period we'll start at that public open house, and it'll be a 30-day comment period, and then we'll bring that back to you probably in the middle of September for your input. We'll share the community's input with you, talk a little bit about the priorities, the spending levels, and your thoughts before we take it to a council work session, have a conversation with them about it, and then we generally go back to a council for adoption. And that all, that this is just one of the many budget plans that the council reviews every fall. So last year, I don't think we got the council until November. So we're trying to be a little bit more proactive. Initially, we hope we can do it in June, but we've been doing a lot of work to understand the existing park system. We'll talk a little bit about that as we go through the presentation. Again, so we have a proposed plan, and it was adopted in November, and the plan references the CIP. So up until 2 years ago, the CIP was
clarified. Is the proposed plan that was adopted in April of 2022?
Oh,
the revised capital plan
was adopted.
A portion of.
Yeah, in November of 23.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
That's okay. Before 2 years ago, the capital plan was only updated every 6 years. And so there was a 6-year plan and a 20-year plan. Now we're revising the capital plan on an annual basis to be more responsive to the needs at the time, being locked into the plan and having to go through the process of it. So it's an annual process at this point. We have a proposed plan because the Growth Management Act requires us to have a proposed plan. And again, we have that 20-year capital forecast and a 6-year capital. So this plan is the 6-year plan that you'll be reviewing over the next weeks, several weeks. Mentioned that we're transitioning from a 6-year plan to an annual plan. So the capital plan is broken up into different categories, and I just wanted to provide a quick definition of those categories. And it really boils down to when something gets capitalized versus when something is considered routine or just beyond routine maintenance, or a capital project like a brand new car. Brand new park facility. So preventative maintenance is things like putting a new roof on a park shelter or resurfacing the parking lot that we talked about. Ideally, we would be doing those things so we wouldn't be replacing 26,000 square feet of asphalt at the Clam Lane parking lot. We would be doing more preventative pavement projects like seal coating and striping. So in the case of Line, it became a major maintenance project because of the size of the project. So major maintenance is, again, just as it says, it's a bigger project. It's generally speaking, things that are over $100,000, $50,000 sometimes is a major maintenance project. It just depends that's replacements or major renovations of facilities or buildings. Parking lot trail resurfacing, if it's to repair things that are no longer functioning at all, we would consider that one of the major projects. And it goes through a more stringent bidding process. It's also worth mentioning that the preventative maintenance program is, generally speaking, work that's done by a contractor, not our operations staff. In some cases, we'll buy equipment for our operations folks using capital money. Last year, we spent over $100,000 on irrigation control equipment for all of our parks because of the indication technology was changing. So when everything was transitioned to 5G, we couldn't communicate with our controllers anymore. That's a really important part of sort of water management. So it's a good example of a project where we use capital money. We collaborate with our operations folks, then they use the equipment that we purchase to do the work. So there is some overlap. Obviously, every time you have a program, there's a little gray area where you're sort of in and out of the part of the definition. So I've added a category this year. I'm interested in your opinion of the name of the category. Everybody's got mixed opinions. I have branded it stewardship capital improvements. And what that means to me is we're taking care of the parks that we already have. And this goes to that slowing down new capital park development. So when you look at if you compare last year's capital plan versus this year's capital plan, we're spending more capital money on parks that we already own and manage. Adding pickleball courts, adding a ball field where we have a ball field in the master plan, and we just didn't build it in the phase. So stewardship for me is taking care of what we have. And so that's why I sort of branded it that. But if it has anybody heartburn, it's something we can certainly talk about on existing park development. Something a less touchy deal. And then new park capital development projects, which are basically the Kirk Creek of the world, Camp Creek Community Club, those sorts of projects where we have a raw piece of land, and we're going to build a park. And those are the new capital projects. We also have land acquisition, which I believe Danielle is here today to talk about the legacy lands part of land acquisition. But we also have the PIP dollars, and there are PIP accounts that are the older PIP accounts are for land acquisition only, and they transition to just one bucket of money that was for acquisition annual. So we're trying to spend the expiring PIP dollars on properties that satisfy our level of service needs in the PIP districts. So we'll talk a little bit about that in the part of the plan. We also have a small account in here for equipment and vehicles, and their investments in equipment and vehicles for needs that we're currently not in. So we have a relationship with Fleet, and generally speaking, most of our equipment with four wheels comes from Fleet. So anything with an engine, but from time to time we recognize a need that is sort of above and beyond that, and we make an investment with this money.
So that clarifies, we do have a ER&R program where we have a replacement of existing assets, and that's not what this is. It's not separate. This is what we're adding to our team. So, yeah. For example, last year we didn't have a chipper. We acquired new assets and the chipper still on here, but that's something that we're adding to our system, and then that will be a replacement cycle for the future. So this is just making sure that we've got the right widgets to do the work we have. Get new employees, we for seasonals, whatever that may be, if we're adding to what we put that in our top function here to consider. Mr. Meeks,
quick question.
Sure.
So where does that life cycle replacement cost money come from?
Well, we pay into it every month, so it's part of our baseline O&M budget, and then that goes into a different account, and Fleet manages that. Okay. So, like for 24, we just got our list, and I think there's 43 vehicles that are due to be replaced next year. We have about 180 assets that are managed by them,
so it's tucked in under the O&M.
Yeah.
Same with computers,
yes,
the ER&R. Not obviously managed by Fleet, but by a different department. So it's easy to replace on cycle. So quickly on major maintenance, and just as a recap for that capital prioritization. So when you look at the list, it's based on an understanding of where the need is, not just my pet project, Rocky's pet project. Although most of the work. Needs impact, again, it's basically does it meet recreational need. Here's a little bit better outline of that park user impact. So we use the American Community Survey to evaluate even the topics. So the percentage of people of color that potentially serve, people under 5, people over 65. That students on free and reduced lunch, as I mentioned, and the students below the poverty level, poverty line. And then I also neglected to mention that if you're above or below the BMI, and then we did have a disability layer in that evaluation. But body mass index, the weight. So it's not the best evaluation of fitness, but it's the industry acceptance evaluation. So we can talk about that. So
that's cool.
Again, return on investment, operational impact, and stewardship impact. Both major maintenance and capital. So as you can imagine, with over 90 properties, we have lots of things in our system that require attention. We have some very old properties. So regional park is very old. Lots of shelters. And so Jacob Houston, who's not on the phone right now or on the call right now, has joined us in the last 4 or 5 months, and he's been out in our park system using some new inventory equipment that we purchased. And doing an inventory, updating our inventory and an assessment of our current park assets, our benches, our picnic tables, shelters, trails. And so we're very excited because you two weren't here last year, but we talked about developing and prioritizing a deferred maintenance list, if you will, and working to try and understand of our assets. And so we have started that process. I'd say that we have a few parks still to visit, but the capital plan this year has individual parks, individual major maintenance listed in it all the way to 2029, whereas the capital plan last year, we got to about 3 years out. Like, hey, we're going to have some maintenance projects. And there was a big chunk of money that we were going to allocate as we learned. So we've done a lot of work to understand the system.
On this slide, real quick, making numbers.
This is the capital list.
I understand.
Yeah,
but you're ranking them to get to each reason.
I know. So, okay. No work.
So you're right. We shouldn't have a 4 and a 5. This would be 3 threes and a 7.
So a lot of them score the exact same.
Yeah.
And I started out like saying, okay, there's 3 threes, like a golf score, and then I switched it midstream because it's going to get. And then
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't feel this question. 3 threes. Your criteria for DEI, are they weighted or are they all sort of equal?
They're So the way it works is if you met three of those, if the property met three of those criteria, then you get 5 points. If it met two, you get three. If it only met one, you get three. Yeah, there's no weighting in the
yeah,
in the evaluations.
Because a lot of those criteria look like they also mirror the state's health disparity map that was published a few months ago.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, the other map that was published was the tree canopy and shade cover map as well. Overlay those, remove the layers, see if they placed a high importance on certain criteria that probably be more than people of color.
So you're saying we're reading the state and the criteria?
Would be yes,
of course you are. Yes, of course. Okay. It's good work. It's really good.
No, and we're
fine with the 3-3.
What it would do though, by weighting the criteria, you wouldn't have equal right.
Yeah.
If something would rise to the top.
Yeah. And I think when we were developing the criterion, the rubric is there was a concern of as people look at our machine, there turns into be a bunch of questions. Why is this one weighted and not the weighted? And we didn't want to have it where you had to have all the badges in order to get the points. And so that's where we kind of that middle ground was this. Here's what we're looking for. And if you get three of those, then you get full points because, you know, there's an assumption. They're all important. Depending upon who's in the room that day, that's the highest priority.
Right. Yeah.
It's a wicked problem to try to make sure that it's
well, and the spreadsheet is a tool, and so it's really when we get to this point, there's all sorts of pivot tables. It's really sort of unattractive, and so
our communities would have a hard time.
Yeah.
So
any other questions about the capital? Let's sort of gloss over it because we'd already talked about it. And I was tooting Jacob's horn about the work he's done in the field and talking about this list. And this is the major maintenance list. So it takes up three slides and we're not done. So, but you will notice that we've assigned years to a fair amount of things. There's also a column for rank. It does not follow the one through whatever. There's just I could go in and cook the ranking to say this has to be done, and the thing at the top of the list is the well that Brad needs to be replaced. And it's that way. Even though it only ranks number 7 because there's nobody using it, but we need a host there because we have really sort of high level bandwidth. Homeless encampment there. We don't have a host there because we do, but she doesn't have water. She has potable water, but it's not really all that
or
palatable. So we're going to fix that.
So it's state level to be potable, but none of us would want to drink it.
Yes.
Get a higher. Now we have a chlorinator, filters, maybe punch holes as well. Potable energy.
So, wonder if that would happen.
Well, so we got these lists. It's all in the diagram. Next page.
Batteries die.
Next page.
Yeah, so we have,
as again, I mentioned, it's all about.
We have this projected up. I'll run through the format of this really quickly after we get through the slideshow. Now that we have a battery that's done. And then we have the items that are beyond that are gone currently planned. Just a few things right there. There's 40 Joma bridges. We're currently evaluating bridges for 40 Joma. It's just that we don't have a plan yet for the place of bridges. So that too may, when we develop the next plan 2 years from now, we may see that get bumped up on the list because we know what we're dealing with. We have 10 and many of them be dealt with. So, some notable changes real quickly. In the preventative maintenance category, we added a bridges, piers, and boat launches preservation category. Preventative maintenance, we didn't have that last year. Evelyn, who was on the call and isn't on the call anymore, has been working. She's already project manager for a few months. She's been working on updating our bridges inventory. We've added piers and boat launches. We don't have very much of that infrastructure. We're going to have a fishing year. It just makes sense that those sorts of structural structures would go together in the category, but it's mostly about bridges. We have over 50 bridges. Interestingly enough, when we mentioned that in project meeting with the engineering project management, their bridge engineer said, "Oh, that almost doubles our bridge list." So they weren't really aware that we had so many bridges in this program. We don't have a whole lot of vehicle bridges, though, and we are actively addressing them. There's a lot of deferred maintenance, a lot of deferred inspection. So I figured we needed to have a little bit of dedicated fund for that work.
And preventive maintenance is going in fund, so they're not part of capital budget per se, but philosophically, we want to show you and the community is that we are investing to extend the life, take care of what we have, or to get to a capital. So, sorry.
That's okay. It is worth noting that it's not part of it. It's an addendum, right? That we use to hire consultants and do things that are sort of beyond the capacity or the capability of our
folks. And David, are you including culverts into that bridge?
We talk about that. I'm really afraid of that adding that because how big of a culvert?
There's rules. Right?
Yeah.
And so I without getting the details,
Surely
provide some guidance. But
yeah,
one of the reasons why we do bridges is because we want to protect waterways, right?
Right.
And the culverts are a major tool in trying to do that. It's not the buzz term of the day. Take care of fish.
That's probably the next layer of that onion, to be honest with you.
Eat the apple that we've already been in the bridges.
I'm sorry.
But yes, you're right. And I think we need to, that would be the next inventory level, is identifying where our culverts are, identifying which ones are potentially impacting fish passage, and then prioritizing removal or modifying those to where they are. And there are funds out there to do that as well.
There are. I would also add, the reason why I bring it up is because there are some cases where state funding, right, where a bridge was previously appropriate, now with reduced water flow or maybe the use, but you know what, now we want to put a culvert. The culverts are cheaper, easier to maintain, and now we don't have the bridge to worry about. Save some money.
But that is a good idea. We could make that justify that case where it's not impacting your little squash culverts. There's an alternative that we have an awesome culvert.
So,
I was going to say, with the stormwater passage, fish passage, always on deck for conservation district that works with the gates, we then have a grant available.
So the other thing that we did with the preventive maintenance budget in the last budget, we had sort of a 10% annual growth in each category, mostly on my part to recognize inflation. And so we flat that out back to 5%. Unfortunately, as we add assets into the system, it would be nice to be able to continue to those preventive maintenance categories grow in funding. Just the practicalities of our sort of confusing when you look at the numbers for each capital plan. So we talked about this on the major maintenance, the shift of the known priorities from our known priorities to a reliance on actual prioritization process. So we're continuing to that move. I feel like we're 80% of the way there at this point. So that's been really good to accomplish here in the first part of the year. We changed the playground surfacing replacement program to straight out of playground program. So playground replacement program. So last year we were planning on replacing the surfacing at 2 playgrounds a year. And it didn't make sense to go in and replace playground equipment or playground surfacing around playground equipment that we were going to tear out by 10 years. So we're gonna evaluate playground of the year. We've already done some of that evaluation work. Right now we're basing it mostly on the age of the playgrounds based off the name of the bill. And then layering on that the condition of the playground, if it's in the full sun, the type of playground equipment it was, some stuff's comparable to others. And so we changed that. So we're just trying to be efficient with money. We're gonna go slower, but we're not gonna damage. And we added a bridge replacement at Lagos. So it's a big number. We're working with the city of Camas, who uses the bridge in the park to access the bottom part of the dam, spillway of the dam. We're working with the emergency responders. We evaluated that bridge and had it load rated at 6 tons, and an ambulance is 12 tons. And the equipment that the dam operators drive across is 24 tons. And so we knew we had a bit of an issue with an aging rail car bridge down there. Found out how big of an issue we have. We had the opportunity maybe to buy a used bridge, a temper bridge, and use that instead. But anytime you cross a stream, permitting starts to consume a lot of your time. So that's a multi-year
problem.
No, this is a bridge, so it's down at the bottom of the park, the
east side.
It's if you're
off to the east side, there's like that old road.
You go down there about half a mile, you get through a bridge that's it's 2 rail cars. So a lot of bridges, older bridges in rural settings, are either a box car without a box on it or a rail car, a flatbed car. And this is 2 flatbed cars sandwiched side by side. We don't know how old the rail cars were when the youth started using the bridge. So load rating those assets and understanding what they're capable of is a really complicated process. So we have a couple of different structural engineering firms right now. You'll see that number in there. Back to the stewardship of capital improvements. So this is the taking care of what we have. Again, last year you would have seen the Harmony Sports Complex in our capital plan, really appropriate property that we already manage. And so it's in the stewardship capital improvement category at this point. It's shifting from 23 to 25, which is not great, but it's just a part of the process of figuring out how we can fund it, figuring out how it can get permitted, coordination with the city on frontage improvements on what's that street there at
192nd. Was that the we were going to change the access point?
Yeah,
we were going to do some.
Yeah, there's a light at 13.
Yeah,
so it's just taking time to figure out, and it has continued to sort of grow in cost and size. So we're trying to right size that, work with our partners.
Yeah, the great thing is the city got a grant for 192nd.
Yeah.
So some of those costs now that we were having to do part of their project.
Yeah. Wait long enough, I'll get furniture improvements, I'll get done.
Somebody
that's not a great strategy to deliver recreation amenities to the
community. Well, I'm happy because some of those improvements never just been tear out, but they did. So wasting money.
You'll also see the addition of a relatively large project at Climeline on Sand Creek. We were fortunate enough to be contacted by our state representative's office about doing a project with us with the Department of Commerce. Rocky and I put together three different options and listed this as our preferred option because of the grid we have down there. The address, shelter. So we had some skin in the game when we were saying, hey, we're already doing these things, but if we have some additional money, we'd be able to do so much more for this really important asset. The park is constantly full of temperatures. It's warm, it's hot, obviously, it's a lot on the spray ground. And so we got a $1.375 million grant from the state. And we threw in some more money, so above and beyond the shelter, above and beyond the parking improvements, we're going to work on making some improvements to the bridge, the bridge footing, ADA infrastructure in the park, facelifts to all the fishing platforms are in need of some love and attention, nourishing the beach with sand, so you don't have an 18-inch step off the concrete and go through the process of just making it a better facility. So that was a really fun little win for us. And then in the stewardship capital program, you'll see various community and regional park renovation projects. There are some specifics early in the six-year plan, and then as you get further into the plan, haven't really identified areas where we might make some investment, but we've talked with you previously about Pacific Park. So that's a park that we're going to be adding pickleball courts to and a new multi-use sports court field. So things like that. Orchards is another property that we've looked at, potentially doing a master plan and adding some facilities to that. Maybe a water play structure. There's a remote control car course off in the woods that we need to get part of the master plan, maybe move a little bit further away from adjacent homes. So things like that in that stewardship category. And then obviously the new part of capital development. Again, unfortunately, we're shifting current Creek Community Park from 23 to 25. I had hoped that we could 23 to 24, but it's just taken enough time to figure out the budget and negotiate new contracts and agreements. The timeline to finish the drawings is just going to push us into bidding it at the end of 24, constructing it in 25. Heritage Farm public access improvements, which was in the previous plan, would be shifting from 23 to 25, and that's to stay out of the way of the Creek wetland project. The Ruger Creek runs east-west across the property, and Clean Water is doing a big wetland project there. And so we're going to, once they're done doing that big groundwater project, then we'll come in behind them and do some trail work and some perhaps a public restroom, those sorts of amenities, maybe shifting of the fence based on the stewardship. The sustainability plan, we use all these fussy words, and to keep it straight, the sustainability plan we're working on. One of the directions we received from council there was to improve public access. So that's the intent of that. We added some money to that too. So we, in addition to shipping, we added some money to $20,000 for design and potentially adding structures, so that budget went up. And then finally,
in addition of Cooper Creek Woods Community Park development back to the system based on a great dialogue we've had with the Hallands and feedback that we've gotten from the community that surrounds Cooper Creek Woods. We're going to insert that back in the presentation. When you look at the plan, you'll notice that we aren't planning on building it before 29, but that's because we need to get things like Carmen Sports Complex and Kirk Creek off the books for our capital budget just continues to grow as those things don't get completed. So we need to be mindful of what we're asking for in our capital budget. So I'm not going to bore you with all this.
So we're working with our finance department to make sure our forecast of money matches what's here.
Yeah. So the takeaway here primarily is the bottom two bullets. In the 23 to 28 CIP plan, we had the proof plan that was $77 million. And in the 24 to 29 draft plan, it's currently at $72 million. Actually, I found a typo today and it's now down to 71,301. Why they call it a draft. We just keep tweaking it as we go. But this screen shows you a comparison of what was planned in fiscal year 24 for those different categories when this 2023 CIP was adopted versus what's projected in 2024. And, so you can see that growth in 24 budgets specifically. So that's what we concentrate on when we get this approved and we start working as a team. It's done. So next year, we have $10 million worth of work when we adopted the 23 to 28 plan. So even though we shifted some parts out of capital development, we have things that are flooding in behind the beer. And then the year over year comparison, when you look at the 23 to 28 plan, which is the top row that says adopted 11/2022 versus the proposed plan, which is the new plan, and how those numbers have changed. So the one big noticeable number, if you look at that fiscal year 25, you got that $16 million that was in the 23 to 28 plan, which was adopted in November, and it's 23.1. So that's because Harmony shifted 25 and for contribution. So again, in order to keep the $77 million from ballooning up to $90 million, we'll have this new project put to bed. We've slowed down capital improvements to try to get things done that have been on the books for so long. And starting to take care of some of those existing parks that we have and reinvesting in them. And then this is just the breakdown of. And this is what we're working with our finance folks on, where the money is coming from. So we have the real estate excise tax dollars, the Metropolitan Park District dollars, the PIF funds, which are those park improvement funds that we've talked about that actually expire. General fund, conservation dollars, which is legacy lands, and then other, which is just basically grants. And a couple of cases came on that old master plan in our capital. So, that was a lot.
Don't feel that you have questions or comments tonight. We're going to have plenty of opportunity to review this, engage, get a lot of feedback. And if you hold out till next year, don't worry. The rodeo just keeps coming around.
Yeah.
This is the brand flakes of the business. We don't do it. We can't do all the other fun stuff. But it's critical and important to
If you have questions after you take a look at the document, just shoot me an email. I'll get on a call with you. We get on Teams call, I can refer to the spreadsheets. There's a summary in here real quickly. Table 1.01 is a summary by year and fund. And so the left-hand column is the year, and then the categories of the CIP
go to table 3.01. This is just for planning purposes, multi-year. Things are going to take us more than a year to do. It's color-coded mostly for me. Master plan is a light blue, so we'll be doing a master plan for the things that have a light blue. We'll be doing preliminary design for the things that are green, so the funds that are highlighted in green are for that sort of work. Final design is the darker blue, and then yellow, the thing that we all want to see done is choking. Well, actually, the ribbon cutting and then seeing the kids on the playground, like in Carolina, where there were 25 or 30 kids. See how the grass is growing.
So, there's a lot more tables this year, again, to try to be able to read it. Much higher font size than before, as well as breaking it down in more bite sized morsels based off feedback, that we got last year from you all, council,
and finance.
Quick question. Could you at some point give us a breakout with PIP dollars?
Yeah, we could bring a PIP table, the most current PIP table back. I don't have it.
I just haven't seen one for quite a while. So.
Yeah. I'm trying to think when was the last update.
It's updated for.
Yeah. That's all. Yeah, we can request that, and maybe Rocky can bring it to the next meeting, and he can share with you the next meeting. Again, if you have questions, shoot me an email.
Yeah, we're getting
on a Teams call. If you want to get lost in the numbers, I'll get you lost.
But a quick question in regards to Minnesota, the department, and a few others about ARV park post that.
Yes.
And that would be the first, right, of those. We don't have any currently in the neighborhood.
We have an RV host pad at Angel Belt. Okay. There's an RV there.
And Frenchman's Bar.
Frenchman's Bar, there's an RV.
That's not a, from a community park. Yeah, it's Angel Belt. And we had a host site at Online Central Green Community Park. And we're turning that into a RV.
I was curious because I don't want to follow up reading about them. These plants,
well, they wouldn't generate revenue. They're basically hosts that live there and work 20 hours a week. They work 20 hours a week for free. There's no revenue associated with it.
So down by the fire station on that street, something
at the Pacific.
Yeah, is where it would be located for the master plan, which would put it pretty close to the skate park. Yeah, although we have a lot of vandalism, it also, we have a contract right now where we have someone open and close the gates. That's a service, as well as cleaning the restrooms for the facility. So those are typical things for hosts to do.
It's interesting that particular host site suggestion came from our operations folks having out there and talking about the vandalism, or the tagging of the shelter. It's hard to reserve that shelter, and they go over there, and there's some foul things painted on the side of it, and have a birthday party or whatnot, and how a host might actually cut down on some of that vandalism, and the bathroom can be vandalized. So,
have you captured those costs involved in dealing with user use?
Yes and no. So we do have a category in our system right now that is vandalism. I'm not confident that we're getting all of our hours and costs into that.
The DNR last year, DNR spent $10 million on user rooms. $10 million.
Yeah.
And that's a conservative low number.
Yeah.
It's hard to capture the price of somebody, we'll talk employees already working, getting title cleaning. It's like, okay, they were going to be there anyways. So there is a little bit of flexibility. Maybe 2 or 3% of that. That's a problem.
So to do light maintenance at Pacific Park, for example, we should probably be in and out an hour a day in the restrooms. We're spending like 16 hours a week minimum on just dealing with they were pre-existing hosts for us when we got here, so we don't have that free. But I would say
that. I knew that.
Like at Hazeldale, we don't see a ton of
graffiti
at Hazeldale at all. And there's an RV host there. The host actually they become part of our sort of operations crew, and they coordinate with our crews. They do more than just eyes on the site, but it is the 24-hour a day sort of somebody living there that
it keeps the odds of people on.
Okay. I just had a thought, Don was saying,
Yeah, and I know certain parks people will figure out. So, like, I heard this week that Sheriff's Park won't come into the parking lot. They'll do a roll through. And usually that deters a lot of participants in non-recreational activities at that park have learned that they're not going to get out of their vehicles, so they don't stop doing activities. And so, again, it's a twofold thing. And so, and having someone there kind of shoo away some of that activity, but then it's the next step is when they do catch someone, is to follow through with them so that word starts to get out of this place to hang out in. And so I'm hoping it's the, what do they call it, the broken window model. They seem to turn up a little bit things, and so hopefully it starts to build on itself. But it's tough answering a call on a Saturday night saying, hey, we want my pavilion shelter, and there's whatever you want to image or words there. And our 3-year-old's having a birthday party tomorrow. We have to clean that. We have to say, no, we can't. It's a machine. I don't have any employees on that.
At the end of the day, hosts have been a part of the system for quite a long time, and we're transitioning from actual structures because the cost so much more. And to this RV model, because then the real property becomes their personal property, and if they're not maintaining their personal property, it's a lot different than them not maintaining our homes. And we've seen some relatively awful things in our home inspections last year and a half. And so part of the reason to make that change. And you know, things like Moose Falls, they're just not really challenging for the operations folks to get up there, home calls, there's a host up there. And so having a host in those locations, it's a benefit for them, and it's a benefit for us. And they get a place to stay. It's really common in state park campground.
I definitely think that a lot of time carries.
Yeah, some people go on the road all, you know, 9 months out of the year.
In my last tour duty, I had about 45 in peak season hosts, and then we dropped down to about 20 in the off season. It was a great tool to buy the local service that our community wanted in a budget. It helps them on the top piece. We want to make sure we give plenty of time to Danielle for introduction. It has a meaty.
I did, yeah, I do. I think I need to be respectful of his time, though. So, minutes. I will. I just want to be nice, respectful.
Well, at 6 o'clock, we'll check in when we're at, and always follow up next month. So we did in the beginning where we have our public comments, but we can't circle around. At the time we had we only had one person online that follow us from the question at that time. So we can circle around again.
All right, so for the record, Danielle Calvi, I am the program coordinator for Legacy Land. I'm bringing this to you today. And the guidance manual goes hand in hand with the natural areas acquisition plan that was already approved last year. And then it's that's also dovetails with the PROS plan and the CIP that David just talked about. The legacy lands acquisitions are dovetailed in that as well. So we are updating annually our acquisition plan for various regions. I'll talk a little bit about that for you. This is, for those that may not know, this is the Ridgefield Pitts property, or adjacent to it. It's Schreiber, kind of a cool little property.
We'll be able to read it, but at least we'll be able to scroll through it a lot quicker and easier.
All right, I'm not going to go over the table of contents. That's boring, right? All right, so let me just quickly go over. The intent is that you guys will have about a month, just like David, to review my document and then give me any feedback you have. The guidance manual itself is sort of, if you will, the main foundation of the Legacy Lands Conservation Lands Program. This is how we run our program. And then the natural areas acquisition plan kind of goes into the dovetail of how we're going to execute that guidance plan. Think about the guidance plan as a way for us to facilitate the funds going to the cities and towns, for those that may not know that. So we're kind of like a grant fund where cities can come to us and say, we would like to buy X. You know, property. I'll give you an example. So we just paid for the Green Mountain Edition, City of Camas. We also just did a conservation easement on Optimus with the Optimus Club with the Lower Columbia or the Columbia Land Trust. So we basically helped them leverage that property. They get to keep the property. We also get to keep it permanently in conservation. So there's a lot of stuff related to that.
So, as you guys know, RCWs direct us on what we can and can't do. Code refines that even more, and this is sort of a procedural manual in regards to how we implement and create our prioritization for the program.
Right.
A lot of it's going to be the same as it was in the previous model. Four changes here are around our updating of the manual and also our sort of internal versus external allocation or prioritization of projects.
We changed the name in 2016 to Legacy Plans, right? And this manual didn't have a lot of those updates, so we're changing the name. We're also discussing the project application. We've updated the project application. The schedule is actually identified a little bit better for the cities and towns, County Apple, for the nonprofits to kind of submit applications or projects. We're changing the model instead of specific properties, we're changing it to watersheds so that we're not tied to specific property because everything is really buyer, low, and seller. So if we're so narrowed into like that acquisition on that particular property, and then something falls apart, then we have to go back again and revise it for you and revise the council. And we're trying to make sure we're spending our money throughout the watersheds, throughout all of our county, not specifically just one region. So that is a change.
So that's just for internal projects. So. That's allowing us that ability to be responsive and approachable and handling sellers quickly.
Yes.
So hopefully the idea is that it takes 3 years to acquire a parcel.
Yeah.
When you get down to maybe 6 months.
We also are the limit, the spreadsheet shows all the land. There's 5,400 acres we've purchased over the years since like the late 1980s, early 90s. And then the other thing is the conservation futures levy. So we're actually going to be putting a fund balance policy in place so that we're not spending all of our funds and kind of having a funds available since taxes come in twice. So allow for staff and maintenance funds. And then we already have projects that we've agreed to, or you guys have agreed to, with Parks and Rec Board. When you go to your rankings, so there's a lot of stuff that's just sort of, I guess, more of a cleanup, so to speak. I'm not going to get into the weeds, so to speak, on everything because we don't have time tonight. But I have hyperlinked a lot of things on the state law, what conservation lands is, the county code, some of our partners, the projects. Like I said, the Legacy Lands Guidance Manual is kind of, as Robert said, it's kind of like our main focal point. And then we go to the Natural Resources Plan. And then the county internally is working on stewardship documents for each watershed. And then eventually we're going to have a property management guidelines for that. I have listed the conservation futures levies that have come in and also are, you know, forecasted. So there's some estimates there. You kind of see that. We bring in 6¼ cents per 1,000 assessed value for every property. And then that's put back into the community for the investments. Because there's a cap.
It's kind of like with our NPD, where it's based off the budget, going up 1%. And so think of it as we have a budget of $1 billion. It's set at $1 billion. And what if home values go up, the rate goes down, you get that money.
Yeah.
So then we have to do a levy lift or other, just like we do with funds if we were going to change that. And that's something this program, I don't believe, has ever done that since 1985.
Yeah. 86. 85. You're correct. It says October 85. Sorry. Correction.
The other big thing that's going to be through this is we utilize Parks Advisory Board to be that review committee for those acquisitions, but it hasn't been codified. And so that's where this guidance manual and whatever that other element that needs to be is done to make your involvement official and official.
Yeah, we'll have to execute that with council. So I would call your attention at some point, you know, because please just take a look at it. But the intent is that we're hoping to bring this to you today. You guys will be back next tab meeting, Parks Advisory Board meeting, and I can incorporate those changes and to bring it back to you after that. So September. And then we're hoping to get the target by November so that we can get on council schedule. So it's a tight timeline to get through. And then we want to do calls for projects starting January. So you can kind of see the timetable here. January, we start a call for projects. We've identified how that would look and everything. It's a little bit more descriptive than it has been in the past. I've looked at other counties throughout the state that do this type of work and kind of mimic some of their best practices and kind of would help us when it comes to applications for the cities and town. And then eventually we'd come back, you guys would be a part of the ranking. We would have them present all their projects, and we would do a ranking with the Parks Advisory Board. I will look at it first, do some ground truthing, and then we come and do, you've done stuff before, you've done it before. And then we rank them based on, you know, there's some criteria further down we would look at environmental. I also have added into that, this is probably something that you guys would know, so maintenance plans, long-term maintenance plans, I think that's important when we're making funds. You know, what's your long-term goal as a city? You know, fire suppression, homeless camp cleanups, those kinds of things that people they need to look at those things, moving long-term. We would want them to actually have a sign saying paid for by Legacy Lands, because the state does it. It'd be great to showcase what we actually have in the county. And then then what else is there? Quite a few things. But I've put quite a bit on here. There's some templates, interlocal agreement templates that we would have to have with each city. There's specific rights that they have to provide when they close the property. Anyways, there's just a handful of things. And then they would also create a stewardship guide on what they're going to be doing on that property in long-term projects. We also look for shovel-ready projects where they have a willing buyer, willing seller. Maybe they already have an agreement for purchasing that would make it a little faster. So we'll be looking at all of those things. I feel like I can keep going, but I don't think I want to waste you guys' time. Is that cool? Does anybody have any questions? You all got it digitally. You can email me feedback if you'd like, or call me, whatever you prefer.
There is, we're getting it on, we don't have it scheduled yet, but in the next month or so with council, some council time to talk about the program in general. This guidance may be a part of that discussion as well before we go to the formally adopt it as well. And it's a guidance manual, so it's truly,
I think this would have been good probably 5 years ago. I still think it's relevant. All these older farm families are selling the properties.
Yeah,
missed opportunities.
Yeah, and I know we've got some farm preservation projects prioritized. We've got one or two parcels that we're working with the
Washington Farmland Trust.
Thank you.
They are executing something. We just got approved by council.
And I think what we and many others recognize that farmland, that historic character. But now if you go to Richfield, it's 10 years ago, it doesn't look like it does today.
This is good, especially the accelerated timeline.
Yeah, that's the intent, to be a little more nimble and allow folks to, get things before they disappear. I think we're seeing that too often, right? I've actually, we've already started working with a lot of our agencies, partners, and we'll have more conversations with longer term investments.
And these funds are a community asset for a lot of other entities, those other cities, other nonprofits. So, and other jurisdictions have a setup to where they're like a grant program or a bank, and they're allocating these funds to anything. We've kind of got we acquire more than the park or other than given money for other that continues to be, so there's Pandora's box and options that we could in King County, something opposite of us where they just provide money for others to put these conservation easements or partners property. Some other jurisdictions allocate funds for maintenance. We have so much in our portfolio that we're using those funds to maintain neighbors. Again, these are all those future things, and as the county continues to change, that's where that 10 year guideline comes in to see where it's at.
Yeah, so just let me know what you have feedback wise. If not, we'll catch up next month. If you have any questions,
good job. Good job.
Well, Jim, we're at that time where we can do roundup updates, or we can ask for any additional public comments.
Awesome.
Like,
would I help
you? I'm sure you do.
I'm sorry.
Anybody else?
Done.
What, hang around till 6 o'clock?
No,
nope.
I moved the week.
We will be back August 8th. Same place, same time. We will be bringing you the fee program with public comments for a final recommendation. And again, if we need more time and come back in September to go on to board, that's for consideration. But we will get you at least a week in advance.
Unless David,
it's Rocky's fault and it's not to get you free of time to review those comments. With that, it is ended. Thank you, everyone.